72. Smithfield. Milgram made his way back from Benny's shower, wearing a ragged, piebald, terry robe, vertically striped in what must originally have been rust and a very lively green, and his tanky and tojo brogues, unlaced, over wet bare feet. Fiona followed, draped in the Mont Bell sleeping bag, in a pair of oversized rubber flip-flops. Milgram hoped she wouldn't get athlete's foot. He hoped neither of them would. The concrete floor of Benny's shower had felt scarily slimy, the water scalding hot until it suddenly ran cold. Not a stall, just a length of slanted concrete floor against the wall, and had in fact been dark, which he'd actually been glad of. He didn't like thinking, now, how he must look from behind, in the bright beam of her tiny flashlight, in this robe and the brogues. There hadn't been any towels. They picked their way through the minefield of foam cups and engine parts on the floor of Benny's workshop. Back in the cube, Milgram took his clothes into the micro washroom and closed the door. Banged his elbow toweling off with the robe, which smelled faintly of gasoline. "Here's the robe," he said. "It's not that wet." He opened the door partially and held it out. She took it. He used one of Big Ann's Swiss towels for a touch-up, then struggled into his clothes. The softly scrabbling Saharan ghost of Jimi Hendrix filled the cube in the washroom.
"Hello," he heard her say. "Yes, just a moment."
Her pale bare arm passed her iPhone in.
"For you."
He took it. "Hello?"
"The tasking," said Winnie.
Milgram, who hadn't been expecting this at all, could think of nothing to say.
"I haven't heard from you," she said.
"I did meet him."
"And?"
"I don't think he's working for one of those companies you described. I think he's Hollis's boyfriend."
"Why would he hire Hollis's boyfriend?"
"He's that way," said Milgram, more confidently. "He prefers to hire amateurs. It's something he talks about." It still amazed Milgram slightly to be telling anyone the truth about anything. "He doesn't like..." And Milgram strained his memory. "Strategic business intelligence types."
"Hiring an amateur in his present situation could be suicidal. Are you sure?"
"How could I be sure? Garrett doesn't feel like someone from a company to me. Not like an amateur either. Knows what he's doing, but I don't know what that is. But I think he's sleeping with Hollis. I mean, there's only the one bed there." Which made him think of the foam and Fiona.
"What does he look like?"
"30s? Brown hair?"
"That's you. Try harder."
"British. And like a cop. But not. Military? But not exactly. Athletic? But he's been in an accident."
"What kind?"
"He jumped off the tallest building in the world. Then a car ran over him." Silence.
"This is why it's good we've had FaceTime," she said.
"Hollis told me. One of his legs doesn't work very well. He has a cane. And one of those electric scooter things."
"We need more FaceTime, now."
Milgram looked at the phone, seeing, superimposed on it, the government seal on her card. "When?"
"I just told you."
"I'll have to ask Fiona."
"Do that," she said, and hung up.
He put the iPhone on the edge of the sink and finished dressing. He emerged with the phone in one hand, his shoes and socks in the other. Fiona was seated at the table, back in her armored pants and Rudge t-shirt, toweling her hair with the bathrobe.
"Who is that?"
she asked, lowering the bathrobe, hair sticking out in every direction. "Winnie."
"American?"
"Yes," said Milgram. He sat down and began to put on his socks and shoes.
"I couldn't help overhearing," Fiona said.
Milgram looked up.
"What is it that you have to ask me?"
"Hold on." Milgram finished tying his shoes. He pulled his bag toward him, across the table, opened it, dug through it, found Winnie's card. He handed it to Fiona. She read it, frowned.
"The Department of Defense?"
"DSIS," said Milgram, nodding, then spelled out the acronym.
"Never heard of it."
"She says almost nobody has."
"Big N know about this?"
"Yes. Well, not about that call, or the previous one." Fiona put the card down on the table, looked at him,
Are you... what? Desus? Seriously? Then how are you hooked up with her?
It's complicated.
Have you done something? A crime?
Not lately. Nothing she'd be interested in. Much. She's after Gracie.
Who's that?
He has Shambo. Gracie was watching Big End. Thought he was a competitor. In a way, he is. So she started watching me. Now I need to meet with her.
Chombo, she corrected. Not Shambo. Where?
I think we decide. Not here.
That's for sure.
Do you have to tell Hubertus? He asked. She put the tip of her index finger on Winnie's card, moved it slightly, like a little Ouija board, divining something.
My relationship with Big End isn't strictly business, she said. My mother worked for him when I was a kid.
Milgram nodded, but really just because it seemed to fit.
Is she going to try to stop whatever it is that Gareth is doing for Big End?
She wants to fuck Gracie over, said Milgram, any way she can. She's hoping Big End will do it for her, because she can't do it herself.
Fiona tilted her head. You sounded like a different person just then. Different kind of person.
She might explain it that way herself, he said. But if it were just a matter of my going out and meeting her, I'd do it, and tell Big End when I could.
Okay, said Fiona. I've got the keys to the Yamaha. Call her. I'll need to explain where she's meeting us.
Where is she meeting us?
Smithfield.
This time, removing the hairspray helmet, which he was starting to accept as an inherent and not entirely unfair cost of riding with Fiona, and almost, possibly, to enjoy, Milgram found himself beneath a sort of deep, glassy, probably plastic awning slung horizontally from above, running the seeming length of a very long building, apparently the only one on this very long block, ornate to American eyes, but probably leanly functional to its Victorian builders. Sections of brick alternated with narrower sections of gray cement. A pair of obvious couriers sat their bikes, the big Hondas Fiona called maggots, about 20 feet away, smoking cigarettes and drinking from tall cans.
Stay on the bike, Fiona said, removing her own helmet. We may have to leave quickly. If we do, get the helmet on and hold on.
Milgram lowered the helmet to his side. Opposite the market was what looked to him like fairly generic London, some thoroughfare curving past, relatively light traffic, and currently none whatever on this lane immediately adjacent to the market. But now he heard an engine approaching. He and Fiona turned in unison. One of those anonymous, usually Japanese two-door sedans that seemed to Milgram to comprise the bulk of London traffic. It didn't slow when it passed them, but Milgram saw the driver's glance. Then it did slow, after passing the two couriers, pulling in several car lengths beyond them. The couriers looked at it, looked at one another, set their tall cans down, put on their helmets, started their engines, and rode away. Then the car's passenger side door opened, and Winnie emerged, wearing a beige raincoat over a black pantsuit. She closed the door and walked toward them. It was the first time Milgram had seen her out of a South Carolina souvenir sweatshirt, and she wasn't carrying a bag full of toys. Instead, she had a businesslike black leather purse, matching shoes. Milgram watched her shoes click past the two cans.
Special Agent Whitaker, she said to Fiona when she reached them. Right, said Fiona.
The driver emerged from the car, an older man. He wore what Milgram supposed might be called a fedora, a raincoat roughly the color of Winnie's, dark slacks, large brown shoes. He closed the car door and stood, looking back at them.
Milgram and I will talk in the car, Winnie said. He'll be behind the wheel. My driver will wait at a distance where you can see him. Fair enough?
Fiona nodded.
Come on then,
Winnie said to Milgram. He got off the bike, feeling clumsy in the armored nylon oversuit, put the hairspray helmet on the seat. She walked him to the car. Past the cans, which Milgram saw had contained some sort of boldly labeled cider, the London couriers apparently being health-minded in spite of smoking.
Your friend doesn't have any trouble making her terms known, Winnie said.
I heard. But she has orders not to let me out of her sight. And she did agree to bring me here on very short notice. she opened the driver's side door for him. Milgram, who hadn't driven a car for a decade or more, got in behind the wheel. The car smelled of air freshener and had a large St. Christopher medal affixed to the dash. When he walked quickly around the back, opened the door, got into the passenger seat, closed the door. "Nice suit," Milgram said as she crossed her legs.
"It's perverse of me."
"It is."
"Navy or charcoal being the norm. Fed shows up wearing a wedding dress, it'll be described as a black suit." "A black suit, and she shoved her badge in your face." "She was wearing charcoal gray from Brooks Brothers. The credentials were presented slowly, respectfully, at mid-torso level. But then it's a black suit, and she shoved the badge in their face. Know what's weird about that?"
"No," said Milgram.
"You don't present the credentials, you don't get that. That's why cards are so much better. The badge is like something out of a role-playing game, some seal of Elder Doom. When your job's building relationships and establishing rapport, the credentials are murder."
Milgram considered her. "That's your job?
You're here, aren't you?"
He thought about it. "I see what you mean. Who's that man?" he asked, to change the subject.
"I'm renting his spare bedroom. Really, the suit's for him. If he's going to drive me around, I figure I can look like his idea of a professional."
The man had strolled a little farther, stopped, and now stood with hands in raincoat pockets, staring out in what Milgram thought might be the direction of the city. Milgram twisted in his seat, saw Fiona watching them, astride the Yamaha, her helmet hair a tousled dandelion.
"What's going on?" she asked.
"Gracie and Foley have kidnapped someone who works for Big Ant."
"Kidnapped? That has a very specific meaning for me. That's a crime. Kidnapped who?"
Chombo. He works for Big Ant. They went to the home of the man Chombo was staying with, hit the man, threatened him, his wife and child as well, and took Chombo away."
"You didn't tell me?"
"I haven't had time," said Milgram, which in a way was true. "And I've had to infer a lot of it."
"What's Chombo?"
"He seems to be some kind of researcher on a project of Big Ant's. Big Ant wants him back."
"Ransom demand?"
"Me."
"You what?"
"I'm the ransom, Fiona told me. She figured it out when Gareth was tasking her."
"Go on."
"They're giving them someone else instead. Ajay. They're making him look as much like me as they can. I think he was a soldier or something." Winnie whistled. She shook her head.
"Shit,"
she said. "I'm sorry," he said.
"What does Gareth want Fiona to do? Do you know that?"
"Fly a video drone, when they do it."
"Do what?"
"I don't know. Get Chombo back." Winnie frowned at him, drummed the fingers of one hand on a pant-suited knee, looked away, then quickly back.
"Thank God for leave en route."
"I'm sorry I didn't tell you sooner."
"Gareth,"
she said. "Gareth."
"You're arranging for me to speak with him, soonest, tonight."
Milgram looked at the St. Christopher. "I can try, but..."
"But what?"
"Don't bring him," indicating the retired Scotland Yard detective, but keeping his hands below the level of the dashboard.
"By phone. And not my phone either. He'll have a number that's a throwaway. Get me that."
"Why do you want to talk with him? He'll ask me."
"He's building something. He's building it for Gracie. I don't want to know what it is, at all. The kidnapping angle puts things in a different light."
"Why?"
"Makes me think Gracie is indulging himself over here. Kind of midlife adventure. Kidnapping. Sort of like a red convertible for a certain kind of guy. Businessman in his position can't afford it, at all. But they don't actually teach you business in the schools. He doesn't know that, though."
"What should I tell Gareth?"
"Tell him it won't take long. He won't have to tell me anything, admit to anything, provide any information. It won't be recorded. He can use voice distortion software, which he will anyway, unless he really is an amateur. In which case, you're all liable to wind up with Mike all over you real soon now, and there's nothing I'll be able to do about it. Tell him I have an Easter egg for him, and what I'll give him isn't mine in any way. Nothing to do with me."
"Why should he believe you?"
"Context. If he's any good, he'll be able to find out who I am and see where I'm coming from. But what he won't get from that is that I've got a hard-on for Gracie. That's up to you. You've got to convey that, that it's just personal that way.
She smiled in a way that Milgram didn't like.
Maybe it's my midlife adventure.
Okay, said Milgram, not feeling in any way that it was.
Tell me something, though.
What?
If you're what they want in exchange for Big End's guy, why are you being driven around by a girl on the back of a bike? Why aren't you locked down, watched over, massively surveilled?
Because Big End has almost nobody he can trust right now.
Shit's deep,
she said, with what he took to be a kind of satisfaction.
Out now. You've got your orders. Go.
Milgram got out. Seeing the man in the raincoat approaching, he left the door open. He turned and walked back, past the two cider cans, lonely sentinels of Smithfield, as Fiona started her engine.